That wonderful theme indicates that it's time for another program we call Blind. Let's see. It's not working. What happened? Why did this reverb all set up to work and it's... What have I done? What possibly could have happened? Something happened here. It's not working. Bum. Well, anyway, hello there. Welcome to Blind Like Me. With Phil Barr, that's me. And here we are. Let's see. Is it going to work now? I think, yes. Blind Like Me. So I had that all set up to do. And I reached up and turned something off, obviously. Now we'll kill that. Hello? Isn't it nice? Cute little toys like that. I love toys. My name is Phil Barr. You probably guess that from the silly stuff we're doing here. Anyway, it's time for another Blind Like Me show. Blind Like Me. Most of you are blind. Most of you... Wait. I get to say this in the thing here. Let me find the switch. There's many switches on this board. Most of you are blind like me. Isn't that cute? Why does he do that? Anyway, we think it's a good show for you to line up today. We're going to talk to a really nice lady named Nancy Davis. You probably never heard of, and you may never hear of again, but she's done good things. She went back to school and got herself a degree, and she'll let her tell you all about it in just a minute. Remind you, of course, Blind Like Me at txucom.net. That is my Blind Like Me email address, and we would like for you to let us know if you have someone who you think would be a good guest for our show, who would fulfill our requirements, which are pretty lax. All you have to do is be blind to be on this show. It's looking for people who are dealing with blindness and who are handling it and making their way in this world as a blind person. That's all we're looking for. If you'd like to be a guest or if you know somebody, of course, we don't spurn folks who've done extraordinary things. We don't mind mountain climbers or bank robbers or folks who've had hit records. We don't mind those kind of people, but we're not exactly looking for them. We will take them if we find them. But if you know somebody who'd make a good that you think would make a good guest, or if you yourself personally would like to be a guest, you can email us at blindlikeme@txucom.net, or you can call me at 936-634-9500. I'm around that phone most of the time, you know. Hi, everybody. Blind Like Me. We're going to visit today with Nancy Davis. Nancy is from Houston, Texas. And how are you, Nancy?
I'm fine. I just was scanning something with my scanner, reading the rules to be a supervisor for marriage and family therapist.
The rules to be a supervisor for American family therapist. In other words, you have
marriage
to...
and family therapist.
Oh, marriage and family. And you have to... you have to meet certain qualifications, or you have
to... Yeah, I've met the qualifications, done the coursework, and now I'm going to start supervising. I've been a therapist for 20 years now.
How long?
20 years.
20 years.
20 years.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Are you totally blind?
No, I'm legally blind.
Legally blind. How much vision do you have?
Well, let's see. I'm documentedly legally blind. I think I have minus 20 over 2,000.
But no car driving, of course.
No car driving.
No car driving, and but you do see well enough to get around and to go places without a cane or a dog or.
Right, I do. I do. I think I kind of have eyes in my feet sometimes. Yeah, I have been legally blind for, oh goodness, 35 years. So,
now, but you didn't start out this way. You started out as a what we call a normally sighted or perfectly sighted.
Yes, I was normally sighted until I was 28 years old.
So you were 28, and so you were raised in a family as a, I mean, you had no concept of blindness or that this would ever happen to you. Did you know any blind people?
No, I had never seen. I think I had seen one blind person on the street one time.
I grew up
in Galveston. And and there was a blind man that walked around the street playing an organ, accordion.
Yeah. Well, you see one blind person, you've seen them all, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was the only one I've ever seen, and I kind of thought that, and you know, and noticed that he could play music, but you know, I thought that was pretty significant.
Back then, a lot of blind people did that, and it was an honorable way for a blind person to make their living. You know, I don't know that that's done so much anymore, but. I thought I might have to do that when I was a kid. I thought this is probably what I'm going to end up doing. So you were raised in Galveston.
Yeah.
And so you this was what years? In the 60s, 50s, and 60s?
Well, the 50s and 60s. I graduated. I'm actually 67 years old. So I graduated from high school in 1953.
In 53.
From Galveston. And,
all right.
So I went 1 year to college, and then I got married. And had four children, and then was diagnosed with, it's called a juvenile form of macular degeneration, when I was 27, I got, my eyes started going, were almost as bad as they are now.
Yeah.
But, so it was a huge adjustment. I was working as a legal secretary, actually, at the time.
But there was nothing anyone could do to stop this?
No.
And is there now? I mean, if this happened to you now, could they?
No, not. I think they are able to do something with some forms of macular degeneration. It was also diagnosed later, more definitely, that I have Stargardt's disease. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, as a matter of fact, I haven't.
It's a rare disease that is hereditary. That we've looked back, and I had an uncle. It's in the family, and I've been a part of a study with Harvard University around Stargardt's disease, and they actually isolated the gene that causes it.
Really?
And so, but there's nothing they can do for it. It actually affects the macula, and the macula almost totally degenerates, which causes the loss of all central vision, and so mostly I have peripheral vision.
So, but nowadays they could tell a prospective parent whether their child...
Can tell that by a blood test now.
Sure they can now.
Yeah, they could tell it.
Yeah.
And they could also tell, actually, the symptoms of it start showing up at puberty. I had all my children tested, and none of them have inherited.
Really? Is there a chance that it could have been passed on, though?
Yeah. Yes, and it could be passed on. They're all carriers of the gene. And so it's an erratic gene that they don't know when it's going to show up.
Well, I don't want to get too much off the subject, but I think we're looking at the last generation of blind people.
You know, I think so too.
I'll never live to see it. I'm 62.
Yeah.
And I think by 2015 or so, I think they will probably have, because they already have a kind of a bionic eye that will give you vision. If you've never seen, they have to tell you what a table is, and then you have to remember, oh, that's a table, because you've got no concept. People like me have never seen. Anyway, I think we'll that's for another show. So you were married, and you had four children, and you were 27 years old when, and all of a sudden, you began losing your eyesight.
Right.
You were a legal secretary then. In other words, you typed forms and things.
I typed a lot of forms, typed from dictation, but in those days you had just, I had a typewriter, a manual typewriter.
Sure.
You can probably remember those.
Yeah.
And you weren't allowed, you weren't supposed to make any mistakes, and lines started running together, and so I went to an eye doctor. I had never worn glasses, never had any problem with my eyes, and first I went to like a Texas State Optical, and
yeah,
they didn't diagnose me correctly, and finally I went to an ophthalmologist and was diagnosed with an eye disease, and actually told at that time that I'd have time to learn Braille before I was told I was going to go totally blind. But again,
thank heavens you didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't. And but it was a very, you know, fearful time, and I had small children, and it was a very fearful, shocking
thing. I can't imagine that at 28.
Mm-hmm.
As at 28, I was one of the dumbest kids in the world. I mean, I knew nothing. I was just drinking and smoking and having a big time. You know? Of course, I was trying to raise two kids, but
right,
I wasn't trying very hard. I was, you know, very selfish and, you know, doing things for myself, I guess. But your children were what? I guess they were, some of them were small at that point.
Yeah, I had three children at that time.
Yeah.
And then I had one a few years later, but
well, you had a child after this happened?
Yeah, I had one child after this happened, and didn't really understand all the circumstances regarding the heredity and everything. I finally looked, you know, found out more information about it later, but I don't know if I would have had more children. You know, it was like, it didn't stop me from having another child having the disease.
Yeah, but you had them tested, and sure enough, nothing.
All my children were tested, right, and now it's time for my grandchildren to be tested, but they haven't been tested yet.
So you sat down and had a good cry and then realized, well, I'm still alive. I have to go on. I have to do something.
Well, I wish I could say it happened that fast, but I was really depressed for several years. In fact, my marriage ended, I think, more due to the depression and low self-esteem that I felt during that time. And then when I was divorced, I really said, well, I've got to do something. I'm going to have to go to work.
Now, did you get custody of the children when you ended?
Yes.
So there you were with four kids.
Yep.
Legally blind. No husband, and so, yeah, you had to do something.
Yeah.
it was a hell of a motivator, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So yeah. I had always been kind of the neighbor people came and told their problems to, and was always interested in psychology, so I decided to go back to school. And with the help of the Texas Commission for the Blind, I found out that, you know, I could get assistance through the Texas Commission for the Blind, because I was a single parent,
mm-hmm,
and with no means, I mean, very small, low means, and so I by that time, I really just had one child left at home, and I went back to school and got a master's degree, and worked hard and lived at the poverty level for a while, and
But you were able to read your own textbooks in...
No. I got my books on tape.
Uh-huh.
I got books on tape, and I hired readers from time to time if there was something to look up at the library. But I couldn't read print. And at that time, I didn't have my closed-circuit TV magnifier that I have now. I didn't have one when I was in college.
Now, what years were these college years?
I went to college from 1978 until 1985.
Well, of course, we didn't have computers either.
Didn't have, I just had, I had books on tape, and I had I paid a reader from time to time at school to help me.
To come and read.
Yeah. So it took a lot more application, you know, to stay studying and stay with it. But I was really...
how were you able to support yourself and the child that you had? I mean, what source of income?
Well, I lived on Social Security. I had Social Security disability.
Yeah.
Because I had worked for 10 years as a secretary, you know, and so I had Social Security disability and some child support payments. So I lived off of that, which was...
Which was not much.
No, I think it was like $1,000 a month.
Hmm.
Which, you know, was that I did that until 1985 when, and with that one child. And then I went to work when I...
You went to work for someone, or you... I'll tell you what, before we get into that, we're about 10 minutes in. Let's take just a little short break, and we'll be back with Nancy Davis in just a second, okay?
Okay.
Nancy.
Website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blindsight, here's Don Shaw.
Are you a busy on-the-go person, but at the same time you really like to read a good book? If you do, go to www.audible.com. That's www.audible.com and download a book. Download it into the MP3 format, and you can listen to it with any Audible-compatible MP3 player. They have lots of books, magazines, newspaper articles, all kinds of reading material in the audio format. There is a small fee. I think you can either pay maybe by download or by monthly fee, but they have real reasonable prices. They're an excellent site. I'll give them a screen reader friendliness of a 7. I'm Don Shaw. Until next time, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights. Contact information. The Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind Like Me. Blind Like Me, lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Contact information. Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information.
Nancy Davis, the Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, I'm confused, aren't I? This one is called Blind Like Me.
Yeah.
We're not nailing, fixing things. We're talking to people about their lives, and you've had a pretty interesting life. So you graduated. Did you complete your college in the requisite amount of time? I mean, did you did it in 4 years?
No. Let's see. I got a master's degree. It took me 8 years. Probably took me one. 1 year longer. The master's degree I got was a certification in both marriage and family therapy and individual therapy. So it took me one semester more than normal.
Well, But considering the candy cane you labored under, trying to raise a child, all right. So you got a degree. What did you do then? Did you go to work with somebody or what?
At first, I worked at the university in the counseling center. I did that while I was going to school. Actually, I worked in the counseling center for just to make the minimum amount I could make. And still get my Social Security.
So you worked for the university?
Yes, I worked in the counseling center at the university.
You had enough hours that they would allow you to, that they would let you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that gave you a little extra income.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did that for the three years I've been in graduate school. And then when I came out of graduate school, I worked one more year at the university. And then I started a private practice. I was asked to go into private practice and got my, have two state licenses. You have to have 2 years experience before you get state licenses. And I got my two licenses and then was working really in private practice and working part-time at two mental health hospitals until I built up a reputation and started having enough clients.
Now, this state license, that's like lawyers getting board certification. It's kind of the same thing. So, and you have to work, have to have 2 years experience.
Right, after you get out of school.
Before you can get the license. That's
right.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg, you know?
Yeah, it's a big commitment to be, a counselor or a therapist, yeah.
And so you rented an office and had a shingle made, and that took a lot of nerve.
Yep, I did. I just decided to put my foot forward. Yeah.
And sure enough, it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. I've had, I've been doing it. That was in 85 I went into private practice. So I've been doing that, 18 years?
So you were 50, 48.
I was 49 when I got my master's degree.
That in itself is kind of amazing, you know. Most people would have
started a new life and forgot about how old I was.
Well, yeah, you might as well reinvent yourself. That's the way. A lot of blind people do that, but it's great that you had the intestinal fortitude or whatever you would say to make yourself do that. That child could have left home and you could have sat around and ate Twinkies and felt sorry for yourself and lived on your Social Security, but you didn't.
Yeah, I could have, yeah. Well, I think it was, I was fortunate in that I just wanted to do some good in the world. It was like I was really motivated to help people. So I have used my own experience, as having to get past a major loss to help other people. That's my specialty, is people overcoming traumatic loss, which losing your eyesight is.
Sure it is.
And so I've seen quite a few clients. I got a lot of referrals from the Texas Commission for the Blind when they were paying for counseling. They don't pay for counseling very often now.
They don't?
I understand that budget's been cut significantly.
Well, if someone needs counseling, what do they do?
Well, I don't know what they're doing.
I don't either. I'll call my commissioner and tell him I need counseling. We'll find out.
Yeah, there isn't a lot of funds cut. Yeah. I do. They are providing it for some adolescents. I had some last year, but I was seeing three or four clients a week that were people who had just lost their eyesight. And that's a really good time to help people realize that it's not the end of the world and really address the question, okay, so now what are you going to do with your life? And that's basically what I have done over the years, is worked with a lot of people that we're going through the loss and the adaptation and getting used to really a whole new life and really helped other people invent their lives. So that's been my joy and pleasure in continuing to work. So.
Well, the only person I know that had any personal contact with you, certainly as far as I'm concerned, was able to adapt very nicely, and you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He just amazed me. We've often had the discussion, if you're going to be blind, are you better off to start out that way? Well, my opinion doesn't mean anything, and I still don't know the answer, but he certainly has adapted well, and I guess you know others who have.
Yeah.
But losing your eyesight wouldn't be the only traumatic thing you discuss, I guess, with children that lose parents. And
yeah, that's, you know, people deal with death and loss and all kind of losing parents or even getting a divorce or having some other kind of physical illness. There's a lot of losses. The loss of, you know, death is a lot of losses that people deal with every day that can cause depression or can cause just losing a sense of wanting to be alive. So it's all, dealing with loss is basically the same type of therapy. So that's become my specialty. That's what I'm known for, you know, when people are, if a person gets diagnosed with a disease they're coping with, I have referrals from doctors that help people deal with a terminal illness or just a debilitating disease.
And I guess now that you know a little more, you realize, because I doubt at the time, you may not have realized just how depressed you were.
No, I didn't. I didn't know how depressed I was. I really didn't. I didn't know how much I had hidden myself away. I was tried to be active with my children, but I really had lost contact with other people and had lost a sense of my own identity and just really thought that I was deficient because I couldn't see. And I then, but when you come to find out you're not deficient, it's just that you can't see, other avenues open up for you.
Well, of course, our premise is that it is not a handicap, it's just an inconvenience.
Yeah, I think I like those words. I think that's wonderful. It is an inconvenience.
It's a hell of an inconvenience sometimes, but it is just. And I've had not real bad depression, but during the time when I was depressed, I can look back on it now and know I was. At the time, I thought, oh, no, that couldn't happen to me. I'm big, strong, tough Phil Parr. Yeah. I'm not depressed. What are you talking about? You know, and I had no energy, didn't want to get out of my chair, did nothing but read books and wouldn't talk to anybody, wouldn't answer the phone.
Right.
So obviously, but I couldn't admit that to myself.
Right.
And
no,
I would imagine you were the same way. Well, now I'll know who to come see.
Yeah.
And are you still in private practice? Are you still?
Yes, I am. I'm still in private practice. And still get a lot out of my work, and now I'm going to be starting to supervise other. When you come out of school, like I say, you need 2 years of experience, and you have to have a supervisor when you get out of school in order to be a therapist. So
I wanted to go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
You say,
so
during that 2 years, you have to have a supervisor with you when you see clients.
No.
No.
No, you see your clients, but you have to go once a week. You have to have 1,000 hours of supervision during those 2 years. And
okay.
You have to go see a supervisor and go over your caseload and say what you're doing and get coaching, more or less, as to what you're doing so that your hands-on is being supervised by someone else. It's like hands-on learning, but they just don't turn you out in the world to be a full-fledged therapist without a supervisor until you've had some experience.
And they might tell you that you're dealing with someone wrong. They might say, you're giving this person, I think, the wrong advice.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, that's not how a therapist would say it, but, you know, it's more to coach the therapist. Well, have you looked at it this way and maybe this way? And certainly if they were doing something really terribly wrong, it would be, you know, the supervisor's job to point out, you know, what the situation calls for.
So a therapist wouldn't be quite that blunt.
No. We're trained to be.
Well, couch it in hyperbole. Let's use that, okay?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites. So this supervisor, and then once you've done that, then you were given a license, and you said that you were fixing.
Then you have to sit for a state exam, and then you get a license.
Okay, and you are fixing to be start operating as a supervisor.
Yes, that's what I'm going to add. That's what I'm going to start doing. I've got my first supervisee starting next week. So I thought I'd better go over all those rules again and get them in my head again.
Make sure that you knew.
Make sure I knew them.
Yeah,
because
that's
I hadn't
good.
Had them in a long time.
Yeah, and so how long do you have to practice to be in some sort of private practice or work on your own before you can be a supervisor?
I think you have to have like 5 years. Or I don't think it's a whole lot. You have to have experience, but then you also have to take, I took a 36-hour course. I mean, I took 36 hours of continuing education to get to be a supervisor, and then I had to qualify because I had so many years of experience. And but I don't know the exact number of years. I had well over what I needed. I think it's 5 years.
And do you have to sit for another test to do this
or no? No.
You're automatically qualified to be.
Yeah. After you take a course, yeah.
Okay, so how do you find people? Because obviously someone pays you for this.
Yeah. That's what I'm having to do now. I'm having to, I have to advertise, I have to send a letter to the universities and tell them I'm available. I'm on a list. The state
sent
out a list. My name is on a list with a lot of other supervisors. And that's how I just got this phone call from this person seeing my name on a list. But it takes a while. I'm getting ready to do a website to advertise myself as a supervisor and say.
And someone off this list chose you without without knowing you, or do they give some? Are there some biographical information on this list? Like
no, it's just a list. This woman just happened. She said she was calling a lot of people and interviewing them on the phone, and she liked me, and so she's going to come to my office next week and start her supervision.
And so she'll be seeing you once a week.
Probably so.
Yeah.
All right, if not once a week, depending on how many clients she has, then every other week. So it's as fast as you get your hours in, that's how fast you get your license.
And did you decide to do this because you think this is going to be, once you get it up and rolling, an easier way to earn money?
Well, I don't know if it'll be easier. I just feel that I've learned a lot in the last 20 years, and it's time for me to start giving some of that away to other therapists. I mean, this is helping people in a different way, but I don't think I'll maybe making more money doing this. I actually charge less for supervision than I do for a client, but it's just a new thing that I feel like I need to do. I'm driven more by my own intuitive wanting. What's next for me? You know.
Yeah.
Instead of retiring, I'm expanding. So.
Well, if you've got the energy, go for it. This is kind of a new thing for me. I've done radio all my life, but I've never done anything like this. And so
this is really great. I was really thrilled to hear that you were doing this.
This is
important to reach. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was that I've been work doing some work with Vince Marvello, who's a friend of mine. I think you were given his name also, and we've done things like be on the panel at the Lighthouse for the Blind to answer questions and try to be role models for newly blind people. And I've also done workshops. I was on the board for Taping for the Blind in Houston, and Vince and I did a fun little workshop for their volunteers to teach them how to be around blind people. But but our joint vision and mission is to have blind people be in the world and for people to understand that they can be really productive and whole people out in the world. So we've been both committed to that, and our Vince's big thing in the last few years has been forming the Texas Blind Sailors. And so I joined him in sailing with the Blind Sailors last year, and that is just a wonderfully exciting thing to do. And went to Italy and sailed in the World Championship races.
You did this?
Uh huh.
All right, let me just stop right here. We're at a little break, and I want to talk about this.
Okay.
Vince, let's just take a very quick little break and be back with Nancy Davis in just a minute on More Blind Like Me.
Okay.
Last time you need to... I saw you was the first time I felt love on a night like this.
February the 12th of 1915, a very remarkable blind lady passed away after 95 years of life. Her name was Frances Jane Crosby. And you may wonder, well, who's Frances Jane Crosby? Well, try Fanny Crosby. If you're a churchgoer, millions of people every Sunday probably sing her hymns. In fact, she's probably this country's most prolific writer of hymns, credited with more than 9,000. What's really remarkable about the lady, though, is she was born in 1820, and during the early part of the 19th century, it was very difficult to get a female of any kind an education, much less a blind girl. But yet, through the persistence of her parents and a very devoted grandmother, she was finally admitted to the New York Institute for Blind, I believe is the proper name, and it was, which was founded in the 1830s. There she received her education and then for several years stayed on as a teacher of English and a teacher of history. And Fanny was totally blind. And they say that she got her interest in poetry from her grandmother, who read to her incessantly. After leaving the school, she collaborated with several composers. I think she had her favorites with her hymns and gospel music. And at one point in her, and then she later married a blind musician of that time, and they were married for 48 years. They had one child, unfortunately, died in infancy. But she lived a rich, full life. And that somebody mused that it's amazing that the three most prominent blind people in America from that time were blind women. She along with Helen Keller, and there's another lady whose name escapes me at the moment. Anyway, the key words on this great writer of hymns are Fanny Crosby. Look her up on the internet. And that's this week's Look on the Blind Side. I'm Don Patterson.
On the Blind Side. Answering questions nobody asks.
The Blind Like Me Show. I'm Phil Parr, visiting with Nancy Davis. Today she has a... Tell me your degree again. Your degree is in...
My degree is in marriage and family therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Actual degree is in behavioral sciences, but my specialty is marriage and family therapy.
And you've been a practicing psychologist?
No, I'm a psychotherapist.
Psychotherapist.
I have a master's degree.
Us poor lay people can't, we don't know a psychiatrist from a psychologist.
Well, a psychologist has a PhD.
Okay.
So I don't have a PhD.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Just a therapist. You consider.
Yeah, I'm a therapist.
Okay. Now, I talked to Vince Friday. This is the guy that sells yachts, right?
Yeah.
And he told me, listen, I'd like to help you, but you're going to have to call back because this is my busiest weekend.
Yeah.
So I've got him Monday. I'm going to call him Monday morning.
Oh,
I don't know.
He's got lots of stories to tell you. He'll talk more than I do.
Well, Billy. Oh, well, I've had a lot of talk more than you do. We're gonna try to interview him sometime Monday and get his story. And he also lost his eyes later in life, didn't he?
I think he was pretty young.
Yeah.
He was pretty young when he did.
Well, we'll let him tell the story. But,
yeah.
But
he's actually written a book. I've read his book. So.
That's what Dale was telling me.
Yeah.
Now, you went and did this sailing thing yourself.
Yeah, Vince called me last year. I knew he had been doing it for several years, and I'd never really sailed in a boat. And when I was calling him last year, I just called. We just touched base with one another, and he called me up, and he said, I got an offer to make you. He says, would you like to say it? Go to Italy and sail in the national championships. I need a partner to sail with. And I says, well, what do I have to do? And he just said, well, you have to come. You have to take a crash course in sailing and come out here and sail once or twice a week until we go at the end of September. And I says, okay, I will. So.
Well, why not?
Well, I thought about it a little while, and I says, oh, my gosh, I'm not in very good shape, but I got in good shape. And I mean, because I don't do that much physical exercise. And went sailing and learned how to be on the crew, the trimmer. I'm the trimmer, and fell in love with sailing, and so I went last year and sailed in Italy. We won the silver medal.
You won?
We won the silver, which is second for our category, and so we're talking about doing it, going to New Zealand in 2 years, and I'm sure Vince will tell you all about it. But he's been doing this for probably, I guess, 10 years sailing.
But you had never.
But I had never sailed.
Never sailed, and never thought about wanting to sail.
Well, I had thought about it. I had been out as a passenger on a boat before, and I really liked being out there. But I just never really had the opportunity to learn to sail.
How many partners did he have? You weren't the only.
We were the two blind people on the boat, and we have two talkers, and so it's just I was his only blind partner.
Two talkers.
These are people that can see, that tells us where the wind is. And basically were telling me what to do because I didn't know what to do. And they taught me how to sail. So, but I had to, it really took, I guess, the same kind of risk-taking. Or for me it was, okay, you went to school when nobody thought you could. You can do this, you know. So I just gave myself, I want to do it. You know?
I was going to make that comparison. You're a gutsy lady, and you got to remember, those of you who didn't catch the earlier part of the show, this lady, you were 65 when you did this.
Right, 66 when I did it.
66 when you did this. When a lot of people are just, you know, kind of laying down and waiting to die when they're...
Yeah, and I didn't... Yeah, so it wasn't like I wasn't the most physical. But, you know, I got exercising more. It's more of a mental thing, you know. You can get your body going, unless you're. I'm fortunate to have good health, and so it was. It was a stretch for me to get out there in 95 degree weather and sail last summer.
Well, you're also blessed with a good mind, and they say as long as you keep learning, it won't atrophy. And so that was learning something.
Yes, it was. It was learning something that was fun. But I was also very, very inspired because we have three teams, and so there are six blind people at different degrees of blindness that sail out of Clear Lake here. But when we went to Europe, we saw people from all around the world. I mean, all ages that were blind sailors, some totally blind, some legally blind, some in between. But everybody had to be legally blind at least, and some of the people were totally blind. And Vince was in the second category, the middle category. He sees light, so he's...
But that's all...
I don't think he has very much of it. He can see light and shadows.
We'll let him.
Y'all let him.
And this competition was just for blind people?
Yes. It was a blind sailors world championship, and there were people there from Australia, New Zealand, Europe, all over Europe, Norway, England, Great Britain. I mean, they were, and there were three teams from the United States. So there were 13 teams altogether.
And you took second.
We took second.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Oh, we thought it. I was amazed just to be there, you know. But we were second.
Let me digress just a little bit. I have been wanting to and intend to do a couple of shows on. For instance, I am totally blind, and why would I be attracted to one woman and wouldn't be attracted to another? Obviously, I can't see, so it doesn't make any difference what she looks like. It shouldn't make any difference anyway.
You know what research shows in attraction?
Do you have some knowledge of this?
Yeah, it's smell.
Well, you know, that's exactly what my wife said.
It is.
It's exactly what my wife said.
That's where the chemistry really is. We think, you know, that's why, you know, you find people attracted to one another and you wonder what they see in one another. And it's really that first attraction is our sense of smell. Is the chemistry. It's a subtle smell that we don't recognize, you know. But
do I have to agree with that?
No, I just read that in the literature. Okay. I just wondered about it myself.
I want to get a panel together some night, and I want to talk about that.
Okay.
I read an article this week about a nurse. I read this in Lane Little Reader's Digest. Mm-hmm. I still read that. About this nurse who was walking along. No, a doctor. She's a lady doctor. She was walking along the hall, and she passed a lady who was about to go into surgery, and she said, without thinking, I took out my stethoscope, put it on this woman's chest, and sure enough, her heart was beating erratically. She had too much blood flowing. They would have killed her had they anesthetized her.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, well, how did you know to do that? She said, I have absolutely no idea how I knew.
Well, that's intuition, which is a very strong thing. And I think that that's something that I think it's a gift that blind people have, that intuition gets sharpened to a greater extent. I know it's my being visually impaired or being legally blind where I can't see my clients. Unless I'm sitting right next to them, I can't tell whether they're crying or or not. But I can feel them, and I can intuit what they're feeling, or practically sometimes know what they're going to say before they're saying it, or do things myself. It's not out of any seeing knowledge, but is just following my gut feeling or following my intuition like that nurse did.
All right, along that line, my wife will tell you that I am a good judge of character. I'm a good first impression.
Mm-hmm.
I can meet you, and within 5 minutes, I can tell you whether you're trustworthy or not, and I'm wrong. I'm right a lot more than I'm wrong.
Well, that's because you have developed
How do I know?
Yeah.
How do I know?
Because you can't see. You know, eyesight can be kind of deceptive sometimes, so I'm told.
Well, but that's how most sighted people would...
Right.
You were a sighted person.
Right.
That's how most sighted people would judge their fellow man or fellow woman by looking,
right.
by making eye contact.
So eyesight gets in the way of our inner vision, you know, our inner intuitive knowing. And you probably have a sharp inner vision. So a judge of character, if you can say it's a vibration you get, or you're more open to intuitive knowing than someone that can see, because actually, you know, they make judgments out of what they see. And what we see is not what we get always, you know, really.
I'm not going to say that men are the worst in the world about that, especially when it comes to women.
Yeah, well, they probably are.
Well, they are. You know they are. You oftentimes don't get what you think you're going to get. But anyway, that's for another subject. But I want to do something. I want to do some panel discussion on that sort of, on blind intuitiveness, because I'm not the only one. I mean, there are hundreds, thousands of us who would be as good a judge of character, maybe even better than I am, and who would have more intuition than I. But you do, somehow, with a lack of sight, you gain some sort of a sixth, I don't know, what would you call it?
Well, everybody has the ability to be intuitive, but we develop that skill further because we depend on that skill. to get by in the world. The greatest lesson I had learning to be a therapist was we had to do therapy on the person in the mirror. You know, we had to sit in front of a mirror, and they had moved the chair real bad. I moved up the chair closer, and he told me, he says, you don't have to see anyone to do therapy. You can feel it. And that was the greatest gift a teacher could have ever given me. And that's when I got that I could sit in my chair without being able to see their faces and know what was going on and know what to say. And it's just, so over the years, that has sharpened for me to judge people, to know where they, you know, just I've had to sharpen that skill just as you have naturally because you want to get along in your world, whatever you do.
And you can't see, did you see something a minute ago that you, under normal conditions, sitting at behind a desk or I don't know how,
no,
what's your physical?
I sit in a chair and I have a couch or I have a sectional, you know, and if I'm seeing a family, I can't really see their eyes. I can't.
You can't, really?
I can see their heads and their faces, but I can't make eye contact with anyone.
Yeah.
I can't see their eyes. I can't see whether they're smiling or frowning. I know that there's a head and there's two eyes, but I can't see expressions. So I see, you know, I can see the people, but I can't really see a lot of things that the body language and the facial expression
would tell you if you could.
Yeah, that we're supposed to give you messages as a therapist. And so I can see physical body language, but more I've learned to sense what, not from seeing, but from feeling, are getting a kinetic feel of what's going on. You know, whether I say, well, that makes you really angry, or you're sad, you know, or I can tell. So it's good in that it's an asset in that people have a harder time covering over what they're feeling, masking it.
Okay.
They have a harder time to, I can, they can't mask their feelings as well with me as they can with someone.
And if they can't tell themselves the truth, then you can't help them anyway.
Right. So that's what a therapist does, is try to dig out the healing from somebody, you know, so to get people to open up, you know, so that they can heal their sorrows. And so that's been my gift. That's been my gift, that I don't know I'd have that gift if I could see well, you know, if I could really see.
And you weren't aware of the gift until you lost your eyesight. That, how many people that come to you, do most of the people who come to you know that you have an eye problem?
No, I tell them no. You can't tell by looking at me that I have an eye problem. I mean, I walk, you know, I'm pretty mobile, and I do look at people when they're talking, but sometimes my eyes will look like they're looking over the top of their head, or people will make gestures. So I tell them when they come in that I have a visual problem, and or I'll say I'm legally blind, and that how I, and sometimes it's going to look like I'm looking over the top of your head.
Do you really tell them that?
Yep.
The initial when you first?
After, yes, I do that, and I found one of my best teachers told me that is your best card to play, that you play your defects to in therapy. It loosens people up. It was really hard to do at first, but I found that people see, you know, it takes away that distance that a professional might have, that someone may have with someone that's a doctor, because you don't want to, you know, are the authority. So,
and then you feel like they are more likely to tell you what's really going on.
Yeah, yeah. I told them something hard. See, I told them.
I never thought of it that way. Yeah, you've opened up some to them, so.
Yeah.
So, and you play that card. That's interesting.
Yeah. That's my whole card right there.
That's your whole card.
Uh-huh.
Well, as anyone, just quickly, has anyone ever said, well, you can't help, you probably can't help me then, because you can't see?
No, no one has ever said that, and whether or not that's kept them from coming to see me, I don't know. But
doesn't matter. You see plenty of people anyway. What's the difference, right?
Yeah. It's and that takes a lot of courage to be out there. You know, it takes courage to be blind in the world today.
It really does. It's not an easy thing to do.
There's a lot of discrimination.
It's not an easy thing to do. I was managing a radio station. I had a lawyer ask me one time, why would they put somebody like you with your handicap in charge of this radio station?
Uh-huh.
I just said, because I'm damn good at what I do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I asked, we had a fellow named Dale Levins from Canada on the Blind Handyman Show. He's a physical therapist.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him the same question. Has anybody ever come in and said, well, man, you're blind. How are you going to help me? You can't help yourself, you know? And he said that has never happened to him.
No.
That's amazing.
No, I went to a blind chiropractor for a while, and I felt like he had X-ray vision in my whole body.
Well, you've done well for yourself, and you still are. And you're 67 years old, and you're sailing, and you're still working. You could quit now and retire if you wanted to. Obviously, you could.
Well, now I don't know. You see, I didn't really get a chance to save too much money for retirement because I didn't start working until I was 49.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and you might have lost a dime or two in the stock market a couple of years ago, reckon? I don't know anybody
yeah,
didn't.
Yeah, but so I'm not. But no, really, the reason
now,
I.
Now you're working because you want
retire,
to, Nancy.
But I just can't see retire. I'm just not ready to do that.
You're working because you want to. You don't have to, and you know that.
Yeah.
So. You know,
I've not seen as many clients as I was a couple of years ago, and I just decided to stop doing managed care. Doing the type of work therapy that required a lot of it was just a hassle to do a lot of dealing with insurance companies, and so I'm not seeing as many clients as I used to. But that's out of choice. You know, I don't. I'm not working as long hours as I used to.
Well, also, when you get our age, you begin to feel comfortable and you begin to realize, I'll do what I want to, and y'all can like it or lump it, you know?
I garden, and I go sailing, and I go to work, so...
Well, I guess you were gone, but I worked at the radio station over in Texas City for 8 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, down on that hillbilly radio station above the Showboat Theater down
uh-huh.
there. I was on the Utah Carl television show.
Really? What year was that?
Well, this was 63 to 71.
Okay.
Yeah, you were probably gone by then. Were you still in Galveston then?
Yeah, I left Galveston in, I was in Galveston in 63.
Well, I was at the radio station in Texas City saying, hi, everybody, here's George Jones. I was hillbilly disc jockey.
Wow.
That's what I wanted to be. I was in love with radio, and I was so we were down there at the same
radio
time.
Radio voice.
We were down there at the same time. We were on channel 13, and then they got tired of us there and moved us to channel 39. But I was on that little television show for many, many years. But that's another story. We're about out of time, and I guess we better go and let you get back to your paperwork.
Okay. Well, that was fun. It was fun talking to you. And call me again if I can support you in any way.
Nancy, I will. And they're going to start running us on the taping for the Blind Radio Reading Service in Houston.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they're going to run the Handyman Show. I don't know whether he's going to run blind like me. I talked to Jim Martinez.
Uh-huh.
You know him? I talked to him. So call him and tell him he needs to run blind like me also.
Okay. Well, I'm a good friend of Cynthia, the director there. I'll call her.
Handle it for us.
Okay.
We want, we're not making any money doing this, but we want everybody to hear it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Maybe inspire some blind people who think they can't, they can't handle it. You can.
Yeah.
This lady did. I did. You can. If you're blind, if you have blind children, treat them just like any other kids. Let them run into trees. Let them fall out of wagons, and they'll be all right. Don't worry about them. They'll be fine.
Okay.
Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you much, Nancy, and I'll be visiting with you.
All right.
Bye. That's Blind Like Me at txucom.net. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for listening. Let us know if you'd like to be a guest if you know somebody. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye.